League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed's sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now. And support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to Taking Stock. It's Monday, the 17th of July, 2023. You're all right, John?
Yeah, not too bad. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm miserable, to be honest.
Shouldn't laugh.
It's just the market. It gets to me, you know. You see your stocks going down or a bit of red, and you think, "Come on, it's been happening now for 18 months. For heaven's sake, let's have a bit of a rally here, please, market gods."
There's a lot of green on the balls today. Some big rises.
But that rubs it even worse. I mean, my stocks are in the red, and everyone else in the green. By the way, if you want to add some chat, any stocks worth looking at today? We'll cover quite a few, of course. We're looking at indices, news, investment views, but RNS is out, risers, fallers, losers, winners, all that. And let us know in the chat there, if there's any stock, any bit of news we don't cover, you think we should be covering, and let us know. So, let me just put this on here so I can see my you and me on the top there. It keeps disappearing. So first and foremost, I think, John, let's have a look at the indices. Always worth seeing the state of the markets here and see where we are. So let's share the screen. So let's bring this bigger if I can. Where are we? Oh, FTSE's down 0.4%. FTSE a little bit worse. FTSE 350 in between. The AIM all shit. Not as bad as the rest of them. There we are. Johnson Matthews, a winner on the FTSE 100. Glencore's the faller, biggest faller. Let's look at all AIM shit. Gresham, how we cover that in fallers. But it's not looking quite good on the FTSE 100. But AIM all shit's not as bad. Companies up.
Looks like the miners have had a bad day today. It's dragging the.
That's China,
down.
Isn't it?
Yeah, it'd be China's figures. They weren't great.
Yeah, we'll look at that.
Behind the sort of forecast growth that was expected as they come out of lockdown. In fact, China's economic performance post the end of its zero COVID policy era has been underwhelming, to say the least. And that's obviously, you know, sending some ripples around the global economy and markets. As it kind of suggests, everything's going to go a bit soft.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's first of all look at a winner today, and that is Gresham House PLC, GHE. And this is a sort of comment, I suppose, to a certain extent, on how cheap the market is, maybe.
Absolutely.
Because we're seeing quite a few companies now being taken out, being taken public. Pretty much, so private. I mean, rather than public, and £11.05 a share, which is what 60-odd% up on the thing. But you see, a lot of this. There are a lot of cheap stocks around, I think, aren't there? You know, on in the UK. What do you reckon?
Yeah, oh, definitely 100%. This is a, you know, a consistent theme that we've heard for quite some time now. You know, a while back it was thought to be the sort of the Brexit discount. But it's gone on a long time now. The UK is, you know, it's out of favour. I mean, it does really only account for a very small proportion of sort of global markets now. So if you're looking at a global markets tracker, the UK isn't much. But yeah, it's left a lot of really good companies looking very cheap. It's something that comes up in, you know, pretty much every discussion I have with UK focused fund managers. It's extraordinary. This little particular sector that Gresham House is in has been particularly hard hit over the last year. So you've got a few companies who are in this sort of specialist asset management business. You've got, along with Gresham, you've got Lion Trust, Impacts, which is very much focused on the environmental investment market, and Polar Capital, which does sort of tech and healthcare. And, you know, obviously Polar Capital was hit because, you know, most of its funds were in that area that was really whacked when inflation was rising last year, you know, tech and pharma. But it's left them all looking very cheap. You know, asset flows haven't been great, but they're also not terrible. Yeah, it's just a real lack of confidence. And it's sort of magnified in the case of these things. It's like, you know, they're invested in UK markets and in many cases, and therefore, because market sentiment is poor, they're doubly hit. So, I mean, I've wondered about this sector for a while. You know, today is sort of the first real evidence that it's got too cheap, and the buyers are circling.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'll be looking at it on the front page of it. Share this with you, some of that. So the current there. So we got Victor there doing a bit of coverage on Vast Resources, a bit of news out. You've done some on clean tech. Yeah, John, what's happening there?
Clean tech. Well, yeah, it's an upgraded JORC resource. So I think they've upgraded to about 1.8 million tonnes at Laguna Verde, which is its flagship project. Yeah, it's good news. They've been drilling all year so far, six wells, and that's resulted in this upgrade. And really what that does is it underpins the pre-feasibility study, which they're planning to release later in the year. And that should take them towards, really sort of, you know, confirms that they have the resource they need to hit their 20,000 tonnes a year lithium production target. Yeah, it's a really interesting company, well-funded. Their approach is a thing called direct lithium extraction, which is a lot more environmentally friendly than these sort of big open pools that some other producers use. There was a bit of a concern a little while back when the Chilean government announced that it was going to, you know, nationalise certain assets within the lithium industry. But usefully, clean tech kind of falls outside that. Interesting. This was one of Simon Thompson of the Investors Chronicle's bargain shares. And as you would imagine, when the bargain shares come out, it was off to the races. Then there was this nationalisation worry that brought them back down again. But, you know, nothing's really changed there, except that the resource has been upgraded. So, you know, good technology, good resource, you know, green, which meets the demands of, you know, industrial users, governments, as we make this transition towards net zero. So, it's a good update.
I've spoken to Aldo Botano, who's an Italian in Chile, but he's saying that Chilean, you know, government strategy is where you have, you know, massive sort of lithium plays. And they're talking about resources that are of national significance. There'll be, you know, a controlling interest in that from the things. Even though there's is a massive resource for their market cap, it's not big enough for the government to look at and worry about and all that stuff. So another riser today, by the way, is Concurrent Technologies. Do you know much about those, John? I mean,
not a great deal. I mean, I know it's sort of very, very, very high level. It's in sort of high-end electronics.
I know they're into defense and all that to supply sort of the computers and all that, the hardware and all that for defense and bit of that, you know, sort of. But they've said they're kind of a pre-close or post-close trading update. And they say based on unaudited management accounts, basically their profit tax, they're going to do revenue about 12 million, which is up from 7.4 last year. This is H1, of course. And profit before tax, approximately 1 million, which is 10 times last year, which is 100 grand last year. It's a record first half revenues for the business, an increase of 60% compared to the equivalent period last year. And they say the order intake remains strong with H1 FY23 intake of 14.5 million and an order backlog as of the 30th of 29 million. So just look at the chart here, and it's been a downtrend. But I mean, look at that. It's no coincidence, is it?
I think this downtrend...
Two-day moving average. Look.
Yeah. I mean, this downtrend is quite interesting because anyone who is involved in any form of electronics over the past 18 months, but perhaps even more, has had real problems due to the supply chain crisis, getting the components they need to produce stuff. So you'll see the same sort of warnings that have come out in the past from companies like this about shortages of chips or whatever it might be. Those seem to be easing. Backlogs, order backlogs are still there, and now it's, you know, it's getting the essentially the raw materials, in a sense, that it needs to start delivering. So yeah, I mean, it's really interesting as well. There's lots of, the UK is very good at this sort of thing, very good at high end engineering, high end electronics, and a lot of that stuff goes into defence. You know, you think BAE Systems at sort of top of the pile. You know, these are world leading companies, and there's a whole supply chain beneath those massive, you know, defence contractors that supports it. I mean, it should be obvious. You know, there is a huge war going on the fringes of Europe. It should be obvious that defence contractors do well. And, you know, it was something I looked at a while back, and I, you know what, I just didn't have the stomach to trade it.
It seems to be war everywhere, doesn't it, at the moment? And you see a lot of defence, you know, related companies doing quite well. Amongst the winners as well, Sovereign Metals, a big deal here, actually, for them. And I don't know if you saw this, but it just sticking in the news. But Rio Tinto, of course, one of the biggest miners in the world, has taken a stake here. And they're going to invest $40.4 million to become a strategic investor. And so, and this is basically investment proceeds will be used to advance the Kasia Rutile graphite project in Malawi. But when you get a big company like that taking a stake, that's almost a validation of the size of the project, isn't it? I mean, it's a big project, this for them. And for them to take a stake, it obviously has to move the needle for them. So you can see it would be in a big deal. So it's, but having said that, you know, looking at the chart here, if we look at, what is it? SVML. So there we are. You know, it's almost like recovering to my the launch. They spiked up here, 47 pence. You know, back in April 2022, and it's gone downhill pretty much. And now we are. It's taken us back to the top of this trading range, pretty much. But it's still a big move. Nice gap up. That's you know, good news there on that one.
Well, it's really interesting. It goes back to what we were talking about last week or the week before about Greenrock. Which is part owned by Alba. And the interesting thing about Greenrock is that it's mining graphite. And graphite is, you know, it's a key critical metal, as they describe it, for the energy transition. So, you know, this is similar. This is a graphite resource. This is Rio trying to get, you know, a real sort of head start in the graphite market, which is, you know, it's critical in EV batteries. You know, read across for me is, this is good news for Greenrock, as it seeks itself an offtake partner at some point, or a strategic investor at some point.
Yeah. Well, what was the stat? I forget the stats, but, you know, graphite, it takes up a lot of the lithium-ion battery. You know, it's quite a bit there. So,
and it has to be a certain quality to actually work. And that's the really interesting thing about Greenrock's deposit. It's really high quality.
Yeah. Okay, so and also another riser today. I've had these on the podcast before, but you know, Imperial Brands. I'm getting signs here that my internet is unstable. I don't know
you're
if you
right.
can hear me,
John. You're all right. It's okay so far.
Okay, yeah. But this is basically, you know, a bit of relief here. The proposed 2.2 million. You're seeing a lot more of this in the junior market. A lot more convertible loan notes happening, and less equity fundraisers. You know. By issue equity, I mean fundraising by issue equity, because it's very hard to raise. And if you are a small company, it's very hard. You may have to do a massive discount. So the next option is convertible loan notes. Now, what's quite good about this, I suppose, is that, you know, the person issuing the loans are Wenhua International, and they are the distribution partner in China and Macau for this company. So they have, you know, shared interest in the company, which is always a good thing. I find convertible loans are very brutal when they're not issued by anyone invested in the company or have a share in the company or any interest, because they'll just basically, you know, chuck them on the market and you get the share price hammered because they just want their money back, essentially. But so this is a bit of a positive. I mean, there's a 10% loan there, but saying that, you know, they're aligned with the company in a certain way, so
they
do well. So,
you know, 10% doesn't even seem that bad in the current interest rate environment either. I mean, you know, I remember people were issuing sort of 10% notes, you know, back when interest rates were at rock bottom, and then you start to worry. But that's, you know, that's not obscene, given where we are in the interest rate cycle.
No,
and I agree, it's good that this is a strategic investor that's provided this cash, and it's a good amount of cash as well. You know, it's not like one of the sort of, you know, keeping the lights on fundraisings we saw, you know, a few times last week and in recent weeks. This is a good amount of cash. This is a company that's, you know, it's growing quickly. It's sort of Fever Tree esque.
But yeah, well, there was a lot of hype when they first came to the market because, like I said, they, like I said, you know, one of the stars of the market was Fever Tree, and this is what they sort of do, you know. But it's, like I said, again, they came to the market, you know, at the end of the bull market run here, so went from 9 pence up to sort of 20 pence on the hype of that sort of Fever Tree competitor, and since then it's been hammered from, you know, 20 pence, got a 0.9 pence, but hopefully now that'll provide them with much needed. They say that. This provides us with much-needed working capital.
I mean, they did say when they released their four-year results. When was that? That was back in May. That they were speaking to potential debt financiers, and they've, you know, true to their word, they've done it. They're saying sales up 14% last year to 3.2 million. Sales in the first quarter up 41% year on year. So, you know, this is, it's a really interesting company. I've not actually tried its products because I don't hang around in luxury hotels, but generally speaking, but this is what it does. It's servicing the global luxury market. You know, there's those super high end hotels. It goes back to something we've talked about before, that, you know, demand for travel is bouncing back strongly. And actually, you know, high end travel is probably more, robust than anything else. So yeah, I mean, actually, yeah, there was another statement I read today. It was Vietnam Holdings put out their monthly report, and they've talked about, you know, a massively significant bounce back in foreign travel.
We'll cover that, yeah, because it's a trade deal with the UK doing macro. So we'll look at that. But I don't know if you know Dianomi. They are one of the biggest losers today. And it's quite telling, actually, and there's a read across other companies. But they are a leading provider of native digital advertising services to premium clients in business finance. And they said, as of widely reported here, a key challenge for publishers in 2023, this is traffic volume is going down massively, and they're saying it's gone down not massively, 10 to 30%. But it was like, you know, if it's 30%, that's quite significant. And they say, reflecting lower traffic levels, 6 months now, revenue is expected to be round about 18% decrease in the same period of the year. So revenue guidance has been 30. I mean, it's worth looking at those because, I mean, their market cap, if this is correct, is 13 million. So that's a good bit of turnover for that. Unless they've got,
24, I always think that.
Million or debt, I don't know, because it's worth checking out. But there's a certain one-off balance of the cash there. So it's worth checking out. But they've maybe been oversold. That happens in this market. In the bear markets, there is some opportunity sometimes to take advantage of companies get hammered, like down 40% there. You know, so the market may be lasting a bit longer thing, but that's a big drop off, you know, on revenue dipping by 18%, isn't it? You know,
it's harsh. They have got a lot of cash in the balance sheet, by the way. I know this company because, you know, that we used to work with them when I was at the IC. They provide a lot of sort of back end stuff, the advertising. You'll see, you know, reports that you, downloadable reports tended to be the thing that we did with them. But this is a repeated story across advertising markets. It's becoming really difficult to derive revenue from advertising unless you are Facebook or Google. I mean, it's becoming horrendous.
Yeah. Well, let's look at just quickly some of the most followed companies, because I wrote down the most followed company was... It's gone back to number one. It's a fight between Futura Medical and Sovereign Metals. We've talked about Sovereign Metals, their deal with Rio Tinto, 40.4 million. But Futura Medical have announced that they're 161 million market cap, and they've done a commercialization deal with an American company. So I don't know much about them, but they'll receive 4 million up front. Are you aware of this company, John, at all, or not?
Vaguely. I think it goes back again to my Investors Chronicle days. It was a Simon Thompson favourite.
Okay.
It was pun central in the headlines, given what it does. But, you know, it's selling. It's a really good company. Dealing with sort of sexual health issues. So yeah, it's in a good spot.
Okay. The most followed is clean tech. We've covered this. Alchemy Future. Vast Resources is there's a coverage of that, of course, on the front there. If you want to read more by Victor on the front, but the drill results at Byte Supply Mine, Mosmanol was a well followed one. Let's look into some sort of macro news, John, shall we, going forward? So top business stories, take your pick, there's quite a few of them. Let's talk about that. It's been hammered and criticized a little bit. The UK will only see the benefit of a new trade deal with 11 Asia and Pacific nations if we use it, the big business secretary said. Kemi Badenoch's comments came after she signed off the deal. A trade area that covers 500 million people, and this is with it's called the Comprehensive and Progressive Agreement for Trans-Pacific Partnership. That does seem like that was created by someone in the Far East.
Well, this was originally the TPP, wasn't it? That the US was supposed to be a signature as well, and Trump pulled them out of it. But you know, I think a lot of the criticism is really based around the fact that obviously we don't have a trade deal with what used to be the single market that we were in, and this is a sticking plaster that doesn't get anywhere near dealing with the damage to trade that's been done by Brexit. I mean, you know, on the flip side, you know, these are some quite significant and interesting companies within the CPTPP.
Yeah.
So, you know, Australia, Chile, mining. I mean, that's quite interesting because, you know, raw materials, particularly around the energy transition, are going to be massively important.
Yeah.
So if this actually helps the UK secure supplies of things like lithium and copper, then that's a good deal, regardless of what we generate through exports.
Well, in fact, all this money, if you've got Australia, you know, Canada, Mexico, and they are sort of, and Brunei, actually, oil and gas, you know, mining, but especially Australia, you know, Canada, Chile, and Mexico. So big mining jurisdictions in those, like they say, rare elements, you know. So, it'd be quite important that.
Yeah,
and of course, you've got Peru, Singapore, Vietnam as well.
Yeah, Vietnam's really interesting. As I was saying, Vietnam Holdings is a company we regularly look at. They put out their monthly updates today. Yeah, you know, that is an absolutely fascinating economy. You know, bouncing back from, well, in fact, it still is a communist company, country, but bouncing back from obviously, you know, many years of turmoil. But it's on the up. It's winning business, winning manufacturing mandates from Western companies who are keen to move production out of China. It's got a very highly educated workforce. That's something the monthly report points to, that, you know, its school achievement is huge, you know, beating the UK, you know, despite being much, much poorer in sort of GDP per capita terms. And this underpins, you know, an educated workforce underpins the creation of a technological society rich in natural resources, particularly, coastal resources, which give it things like, you know, the ability to build huge wind power, tidal power, all this sort of stuff. I think whilst, you know, you can look at that headline figure, and I think this is what people are criticizing, that it's going to add 0.8% to GDP over a decade. Actually, the possibility is that as some of the countries within this trade partnership develop, that figure will increase massively.
Yeah. Well, it's an initial forecast, isn't it? Like I said, it could develop quickly, of course. Talking about GDP and, you know, how effective. I mean, it's often said that, you know, China's GDP, even when it below forecast, is way above. It's what we'd be, tear our arms off for. But I mean, it does hit metals, miners and all that stuff when, you know, China's economy doesn't grow as forecast. Like I said, the economy now, GDP data released this morning shows it grew by 6.3%. People weren't happy with that. It was supposed to be 7.3%. But this is up, by the way, from the last report, which was 4.5%. So it's gone from 4.5% year in year, Q2, to 6.3%. So that's, you know, it seems to be going in the right direction, even if it didn't get that 7.3% that they were hoping for. But it's almost odd, isn't it? China, you know, there was this big, you know, wait until China reopens after COVID, and then nothing's really happened. It's been really a damp squib. So, but maybe it's a slow burner because we know at the end of the day, if you get, you know, billions of people unhappy in China, I think Xi Jinping will have to start doing something.
Well, there was a, there was one very worrying figure I noticed in
youth
unemployment. So the overall jobless rate in China is 5.2%. The youth unemployment figure is hit a new high of 21.3%.
That's phenomenal, isn't it?
It's huge. You know, we had a post credit crunch. There were similar levels of youth unemployment in Europe. I actually don't know how.
Spain is still very high. Youth unemployment is like about 20. It's the same as which is odd. You think why in Spain? You know?
Because there's a lack of opportunity, and you know I find it really hard to understand how you know China where you have this rapid growth, rapid growth of a technological society, rapid consumerization. Why that's not creating jobs that can employ the youth? You know, and it either suggests that there's something not right about the official GDP stats, and I wouldn't be the first person to suggest that. Or there's something very strange going on. But those are worrying figures. Youth unemployment at that sort of level is
These are official Chinese stats, are they? Oh, I don't believe them. Absolute nonsense. I don't believe a thing the Chinese put out. Is that what they're doing? Is fine. No, honestly, I don't believe anything they say. I mean, you get this private, forecasts that come out that are worth looking at, but maybe not that. That's what we need. Let's be honest. When it came to COVID, even COVID started, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
I know, but COVID started in a city bigger than London. And apparently, they only had 3,000 deaths in total, or 4,000. And we had like 60,000. And you're thinking, what are you talking about? The stats there are manipulated massively, I believe.
You would have thought so. By the way, just while we're on the subject of China, they've also launched a bid to join the CPTPP. As of Costa Rica and Ecuador, Uruguay, Thailand, Philippines, South Korea. So,
China's a giant.
Yep.
That throws a bit of a spanner in the works, though, doesn't it? Because at the moment,
it's all very interesting.
Obviously, politically, America's trying to clamp down on it, and you know, Britain are in cahoots with America pretty much. So that's quite interesting.
I think this is a shifting balance of power in the global economy. I mean, we had the European century or more in the sort of 19th century. You know, where Britain ruled the waves and all that jazz, and then you know the 20th century was undoubtedly the American century. But you know, there are you know signs that its global influence is waning, and that the balance of power is shifting to Asia. You know, where you have, as I say, a highly educated and motivated workforce, rapid growth, and a highly technological society. So, you know, I think if you aligning yourself with any one of those blocks, you know, America, Europe, or Asia, I think I know where I'd go.
Yeah, but I just feel China just want world dominance. That's the trouble.
Well,
but in fact, right now, how cheap our stock market is, they could probably buy us, China.
Yeah, they probably could.
China, you get an RNS coming out, China's acquiring the UK.
Well, they'll never be able to buy all those defence contractors because that is where, you know, our regulators intervene to stop that kind of thing happening. Particularly having learned the lessons of many years ago when you know, Huawei was allowed into lots of British networks.
Yeah.
And just touch on,
apparently the interest rate rises have driven the biggest post-war fall in UK household wealth. It's fallen by 2.1 trillion. I don't see the point of highlighting that. Well, maybe it's a good thing, but it's just a bit depressing, isn't it? And also asking prices for UK homes slip as the Bank of England's rate rises. It's all on rates, isn't it? Asking prices for residential homes in Britain in July fell. Rightmove said the average asking price of homes came onto the market declined by 0.2% last month compared with 0%, which is normal this time of year. So we're seeing that. Do you know what I hate this time of year? You always get these doom and gloom headlines around saying we're going to depression and all this stuff. House prices will fall off a cliff and all this stuff. They never really do. I mean, even when the banks were imploding in 2009, everyone kept saying the house prices are going to implode. It'll be worth nothing. You know, your house will. It never comes to pass. What you have to understand is what drives traffic in this environment is extreme headlines. You know, if you do something quite sensible that's middle of the road, it doesn't get any attention. So it either has to be one way or the other. So nothing ever comes to pass. Our worst fears never come to fruition ever, you know.
That's why investing
in a bear market where everyone's gloomy is quite good. because the fears never come to pass. They're actual stuff that's talked about. So
that's true. That's true. Always have to, you know, there's sort of grains of truth in a lot of them. So I don't, you know, I don't think it pays to dismiss sort of alarmist headlines out of hand. But some, you know, some of those grains of truth can be quite significant. And, you know, the housing market, I mean, I've said it, and I don't wish to sound. In fact, you know, you could look at the housing market in two different ways anyway. You know, falling house price is a good thing. Because it, you know, essentially means lots of, you know, otherwise, you know, first-time buyers otherwise unable to afford to get on the housing ladder might actually at some point in the future have an opportunity to do so. So, you know, the data speaks for itself. I don't really like the Right Move survey, to be honest. Because what's it telling you? Asking prices? It doesn't really mean anything.
No.
What I want to see is sold prices. And that you get from, you know, the land registry.
Yeah, and also, what's going to happen is... We know now we're in recession pretty much, and it'll be hard bumping along, you know, economically along on the bottom for a while, and that in the end the bank will have to lower interest rates because people will be unemployed, and lots of people are unemployed. The economy will be going on the tubes. Inflation will come down a lot faster than we think. It's in energy prices right now. Wages will come down eventually because people will be... And the Bank of England and all the central banks will have to really steeply reduce interest rates, and the market will rally, full stop. So now's a good time to invest over the next couple of months. I don't see any way forward. We're not going to get economic boom here in any way whatsoever, right? All they're doing is choking off any kind of growth, you know, and with that, wages fall. That's the last bastion, really, isn't it, of, you know, people getting... The tight labour market will end, and then you'll see there'll be plenty of people who will... Take jobs for less wages, and so wage inflation will go down, as along with everything else. In, you know, energy's gone down, that'll feed into all, you know, food and transport, all that stuff. Inflation will come down a lot quicker than people think, I believe. In America.
Maybe. But remember, we talked about before that, you know, the UK has some specific factors that make it a bit harder for us to shake it off.
I think inflation will come down so quickly it'll frighten the central banks. Yeah, and let's be honest, the amount the government have to pay in interest rates as well, they'll probably think, bring them down.
You might be right. But, you know, as I think I said before, you know, if you suddenly do start to see that headline inflation rate fall that fast, then it suggests that we're slipping into, you know, a severe economic slowdown. You know, and yeah, that brings pain of a different type.
Yeah, but the central banks then have to lower interest rates, and then that's good for the markets. So, you know.
Only on the basis that it's sort of propping up asset prices on the basis of your sort of risk-free rates. It's not necessarily good for the businesses underneath them.
No, but it'll get better for them, and the markets predict that by, 12, 18 months. So, you know, the difference between the real economy and the markets is that, you know, 12, 18 months. Like I said, we've been down now, you know, it's over 660 days since the high on AIM. So that's what the markets are pricing. The price is in. They know about this. The markets are not stupid. Pay attention to the markets.
I think you should pay attention to specific companies and the sectors they're in, to see if there is secular growth, to see if those companies, you know, have solutions that tap them into that secular growth, and not really look at headline indices, not really look at, you know, the headline economic figures. Do your research on companies that have particular qualities that you're looking for, that can withstand whatever comes along. As I say, secular growth, you know, things like the energy transition spring to mind. I think those headline figures and headline economic figures are not always helpful and don't always tell you where to put your money.
Okay. Well, John, there's a guy here, Michael, on YouTube. Let's have an idea from you, an idea from me. Michael says, chaps, can you name a couple of cheap, attractive stocks catching your eye? I'm biased. I own a bag load of cheap stocks at the moment. But I'll give you one that I think is in a good sector, like you say, John, and that's good energy. And I do believe that they're a profitable company. They are literally a market cap of 30 million. They have 19 million in cash. They are profitable. Their net asset value is about 39-40 million, and they are heading towards from a renewable energy supply business into that plus an energy services business, which means their margins have got... Typically, their margins are quite weak. They turned over about 240 million last year. They made a profit. A lot of that profit though was selling their legacy asset, which was their renewable portfolio. But now they've got purchase power agreements to cover their customers' supply. But they are going into heat pumps, solar, all that. They own 49% of ZapMap, which is the number one sort of recharging, fueling sort of app around there. It gets a lot of data off that and payments you can do through that. I just think at the moment they're ridiculously undervalued at 30 million, considering they've got about 20 million in cash. They are profitable, pay a dividend. So, and they are in a really hot sector. And like I said, if you look at the broker forecasts, $4.75 a share they're targeting. They refused, they turned down a takeover bid of £4 a share in 2021. And now they're at 174. What are they, 174 price? So that's what I think. It's a good energy, it's a good section, good sector. And they are one of the original renewable companies. There's a lot of people out there who claim they're giving you renewable energy. And they're not. They're greenwashing a little bit. It's a manipulation of figures. But these are one of the original energy companies that 100%, you know, and a regulation will get tight on that. Companies that are greenwashing to a certain extent, you know, will trip up.
Oh, it is getting tighter, undoubtedly. Undoubtedly. Yeah. I mean, I still like, you know, looking at my portfolio, I mean, I still like H&T, the pawnbroking business. Really, really nice business.
That's why I see the chart going of good energy, by the way. I think that's the previous low here, and I think we'll have a bowl. It's almost a cup and handle sort of thing, but it'll be it's a complete prediction on my part. But I think they can't go much cheaper because they're literally, you can sell the company off in parts, it'd be worth close to 40 million. Now it's valued at 30 million. So H&T, it's hat ticker there, is it?
Hat.
Hat.
Yeah, that is sort of hovering nice, in a range. It's not really in range. Yeah, but I mean, you know, again, this is...
That's good, though, in this market.
Yeah, well, it sort of speaks to my bearishness, this company. You know, I think this cost of living crisis is biting, and we'll bite a bit harder as, you know, this mortgage crisis sort of, I think we spoke about it last week when a lot of fixed rate deals come to an end. So I think this is a really, really nice company. You know, some people might say that pawnbroking is... you know, an unsavory business to be in, but it's actually providing a service, you know. Otherwise, what would people do who were facing, you know, these periods of economic hardship? So, I like it. 8x PE, less than 8x forecast PE, which is ludicrous. And, you know, the other thing it does, you know, it's actually got quite a nice little jewellery business that it's taking sort of pledge goods that it can then sell on. And it's got an FX business as well, which sits, you know, positions it nicely for the reopening. So I just like this company, which is why I bought it.
Yeah. Well, listen, that's someone diametrically opposed, isn't it, to the AIM market. From the AIM market, the top was here pretty much in 2020, 2021. And this company starts to go up when the AIM market has gone down. So you could say it's a nice contrarian play. If you believe the economy is going to get worse and not get easier, then you're safe money there. If central banks ease, maybe, though, what's going to happen then? I don't know.
Well, indeed. So a couple of themes. There's a lot of RNSs out today, actually, and there's a lot of interesting ones. Company we looked at quite recently, a company called Windward. This is a really interesting area, and this is what I mean when I say look at secular trends. Now, you know, these are companies that are, you know, in a growth phase, so there is many a slip between cup and lip. But Windward, and there's another company called SRT Marine, which we spoke about on one of our stock screening podcasts. They are doing this thing called, they're involved in this business called Maritime Domain Awareness.
Yeah.
And this is sort of like traffic control for the seas. And it's, you know, it's increasingly important, you know, given that we have, you know, security issues, environmental issues, and just, you know, vast quantities of seaborne trade. This is a nice little subsector to look at. Trading update today. Looks pretty
good. That's up 23%, isn't it? So this is an annual contract value at the 30th of June, increasing by 23% to 27.6 million. And so I like to say they're a leading maritime AI company. So you always got to get the AI in there.
I mean, it worries me. I actually don't like it when companies do that. Just drop the AI and focus on what you're actually doing. The other one I saw today that I found quite interesting, Ocean Harvest. And this is basically making animal feed from seaweed. Mm-hmm. In fact, there were two announcements about seaweed out today. I mean, who would have thought it on a Monday? Seaweed.
Yeah.
Another one called Cellular Goods. Now, I thought, by the way,
Ocean Harvest, they've been on the podcast, I searched them up, but they did an IPO only in April 2023, one of the very few companies coming to the market in this environment. But they did sort of start off, look at that, really started motoring all of a sudden. Obviously, maybe some early investors taking their early profit in being risk averse, and maybe they've come down a bit. But it settled down a bit, but it gapped up today.
Yeah, so I was just kind of back where it started, which is not bad, you know, generally speaking. Anyway, so you know, you kind of think, seaweed? Really? So I started doing some digging, and the commercial seaweed market is forecast to grow at 7% a year until 2028 to be worth $25 billion. So, this seaweed is big business. You know, you can use it in all sorts of things, so not just animal feed, but human food. Food additives, farmers, pharmaceuticals, cosmetics, and it all speaks to this thing we discussed quite recently as well. You know, the increasingly switch from chemical based products into plant based products.
Yeah, one thing I worry about there. I did ask for this. I worry that the way they're harvesting the seaweed companies, is it sustainable? Is it good for the environment? Because they just say, to be fair, the company, this is Ocean Harvest Technology, the company provides a range of natural ingredients focused on improving animal performance whilst protecting the environment. So that's my only concern, is that now there's no rush for gold through seaweed and we start damaging they're already damaged, they're full of plastic and fishing nets, I suppose. But
I hope it's had plastic out at the same time and then you're laughing. Double whammy. Yeah.
That's what they should say. We remove plastic and harvest sustainable seaweed. And that way, yeah, exactly. With AI. We use AI as well. Everything's done there. Tick all the boxes. Marvellous stuff. Thanks for that. Let's take the stock. And we'll speak tomorrow, everyone. Cheers, John. Bye-bye.
See you later.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Wayfair's Black Friday and July sale is almost here. Starting July 24th, score up to 80% off everything home at Wayfair, plus amazing doorbuster deals and free shipping site-wide. Shop the sale at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.